We hope the world is better for you because it sure is fucked up in our time. Ron and Brian, December 1976.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 81 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by a man who also likes to be referred to as Lieutenant Colonel Brian. Brian, how are we doing today, my friend?
We're doing splendid. It is a Tuesday night. It is November. It is chilly, not cold. It is Thanksgiving coming up in a little bit over a week. This is pretty much my favorite time of the year. Not only do I get the have the expectation of a home cooked turkey, but I also get to look at your face for the next hour.
And what could be more thankful than that?
I can't think of anything.
All right, maybe a cold drink.
Drink of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Drink of the week.
Slancher.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
All right, Brian, this week I'm keeping it local. I'm going with Yards Brewing Company out of Philadelphia and their Love Stout. Seductively smooth, they call it, and kind of light as far as stouts go with only a 5.5% alcohol. Hold on.
Taking a sip. Is that a can or a bottle? No, that is a bottle.
That is a bottle tonight. So very good. Probably one of the best stouts on the market, for my money.
You are a stout man when the weather gets a little nipply, isn't it?
I mean, it's that time of year. It's time for love, and it's time for stout. What are you bringing to the table, friend?
Well, I'm going with one of my favorite spirits, Jack Daniel's Gentleman Jack, which is a Tennessee whiskey, but the key here is that it is double mellowed.
Ooh.
So it is mucho smooth. Like to put that on in a glass with an ice cube, and I'm good to go for the next hour.
All right, good to hear. Well, we did not get the drink of the week poll up this week, but maybe we'll try and get a special Thanksgiving cocktail drink of the week poll going for next week.
One of our dedicated listeners did forward us some special Thanksgiving themed drinks, so I think it's only fitting that next week we bring back drink of the week as we are as we take back to a great time where we're going to be spending time with our families, eating, dining, and just being the best versions of the people that we want to be
as best as we can. What are you especially thankful for this year, Brian?
Working.
There you go. That's a good one.
A year ago this time, I had been out of work for a while. I was not particularly seeing any strong prospects coming up. So, this year, I'm very grateful that I'm getting a steady paycheck.
All right. And I'm
thankful. What about yourself?
I guess I'm thankful for family. We've got the whole family together still, healthy, happy. Be spending it with the entire family over the whole week. So very thankful for that, the whole family unit still together.
Now, is the family coming down to you, or are you going up to the family?
This year, we're going up for Thanksgiving. We alternate each year. So this year, I will be headed upstate to Syracuse for Thanksgiving. They'll come down here for Christmas.
All righty. Now, I have a question. I know you take Thanksgiving very seriously in terms of the hosting. Last year, it was, if I remember correctly, one of the highlights of your year was just the time and effort that went put into your Thanksgiving hosting. So my question to you is, this year, you're going to visit family. Now, are you just a guest? Do you just walk in and say, hi, I'm here, feed me?
I will just be a guest. Mom, God bless her, still loves putting in the effort for a full Thanksgiving dinner. You know, we'll have the usual hors d'oeuvre spread, and she picked up a turkey just a shade under 25 pounds, which she will stuff with homemade stuffing. We'll have all the sides, even though we keep telling her to cut back. There'll be pie aplenty, Hubbard squash pie, apple pie. She goes a little bit crazy with the pies, so I will just have to go eat, drink, and be merry.
Good. I think that's great.
And how will you be spending Thanksgiving next week?
I've got my sister along with my nieces and nephew coming down to visit. We'll be spending time with my father. We will be cooking a turkey, though I think I will be having the sides catered.
Good call. Will you spatchcock your turkey? Because that seems to be the thing this year.
You're going to have to explain that to me because I haven't fucked a turkey in probably about 4 years.
See, spatchcocking a turkey is when you kind of cut it and flatten it out a bit so it cooks quicker.
Why would I do that?
It's just what some people do. I keep seeing it on the cooking shows this year. It's everybody wants to spatchcock their turkey.
No, the thing for me that it's a fond memory from my childhood. But
I love these fond memories from your childhood.
It's funny because this one's really special to my heart and anus. When I was a child, we would get our turkey probably, I would say, maybe 2 or 3 days in advance. My mother, I remember, would always be, you know, it was a big production, and she would always have me come into the kitchen when she opened the turkey. So it was, you know, she would open the turkey, you know, she would take off the wrapper, and she'd start to clean the turkey. And then she would get to the part where she would take the turkey neck out of the turkey. And this was the point where she would let me play with it. And I'll never forget when I was 7 years old, I had probably about 3 inches of that jammed up my asshole.
Really?
When my dad walked in on me in my bedroom, literally laying on my side, feet, my knees pressed up against my chest, just jamming the turkey neck inside my body. It was spiritual.
I mean, so the turkey was basically pegging you is what you're saying.
I was pegging myself. I was putting in a lot of the effort. The turkey really was dead by that point. So I wasn't really what I would consider an active participant.
All right. Fair enough. Hopefully you can have as memorable a Thanksgiving this year. But in the meantime, let's talk racism.
This
week
in
racism.
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 All right. And to no surprise, certainly not to your surprise, because you called it last week, Seth Broussard ran away with it 87% to 13%. For a while there, it looked like the Popeyes racist wasn't going to get any votes. Got a few votes late. But again, Seth Broussard, with the dominant performance, had a conversation with the Bracketology Committee, and they have declared this is our final regular season contest. We will be getting the Bracketology results soon, and we'll be starting Racism Madness next week. They have stated that Seth Broussard, even though he only had a chance to be in for 1 week, very impressive performance. In just 1 week, it actually put him in the top 10 of vote getters for the entire season. So I would not be surprised, even though Seth doesn't get another contest this upcoming week, wouldn't be surprised to see him in the tournament. What was your take on the voting this past week, Brian?
It was, it's kind of like watching a horse that has just got incredible parentage getting on the track and just getting out the gate and literally breaking a track record. I mean, we knew that Broussard was going to be a special racist. We knew that he was bringing just so many different facets that the crowd responds to. And to watch him execute with the level of support that he received, it was like a proud parent watching your kid score a home run in a minor league basketball game.
Interesting analogy, but all right. So, like I said, keep your eyes open. We'll be setting a time and a date for the Bracketology special very shortly. And again, that tournament's going to be sponsored by who, Brian?
That we have locked in, and we are very proud of this. Last year, if you remember, we went with a Russian company. I'm not going to name their names. They're no longer supporting us. They are watching all of our web chats and reading our emails. However, this year we are going with, we reached out to a wide range of breweries across the world. we found that we had we were in a much stronger negotiating position with the fine people over at Obolon, located in Kiev, Ukraine. They were asking us for $391 million if we could send them that in military aid. And what we said was, if you start the investigations on Hunter Biden, we will allow you to be the official sponsor of the 2019 Racist of the Year Bracketology Tournament. And Obolon Brewery said, absolutely. So, Ron, I'm happy to announce that the investigations are ongoing as we speak in the capital of Ukraine, Kiev, as well as they are right now knocking down doors. They are opening closets and digging up sheds. We are looking for the DNC server as we speak.
All right, very nice. Well, kudos at again lining up a top-notch sponsor for the tournament, which will begin shortly. All of us are excited for Racism Madness.
Listen, we could have gone with Adidas. We could have gotten Reebok, Nike. Listen, everybody knows that the real money is in Eastern European breweries.
No doubt about it. So we will be lining our pockets with their gold, and hopefully you will be lining the tournament with votes when it starts next week.
And we're going to be lining our pockets with their women. If, you know, having watched a lot of documentaries on the sex trafficking that goes on in Eastern Europe, Ukraine, Russia, Estonia, I mean, like, they are sending us their very best.
And on that note, maybe it's best to move on to Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
So can I tell you what's bothering me this week, Brian? Because it's still bothering me almost a week later from the actual happening. People that take the dealer's bust card in blackjack.
Okay. All right, let's hear this.
As our listeners know, I was out in Las Vegas last week when we recorded the episode. The night before I flew back, I was like, why don't I go across the street, go to the casino, play a little blackjack. You know, I mean, I'm not a heavy gambler. I don't like to put a lot of money down, so I find a nice $10 blackjack table. You know, I've seen you hyperventilate thinking of sitting down at a $25 blackjack table. So I try and keep it low. And again, when I'm sitting at the lowest limit table in the casino, I know the people that are sitting with me are probably not going to be the most experienced blackjack players in the world. But we had a great dealer, one of those dealers who is literally like, you don't want to take that hit, or you don't want to stand on that, like giving some very good advice along the way. Mm-hmm. So anyway, gambling for a while, you know, cards come out, dealer is showing a four, which is beautiful. You know, the dealer is going to have to take a draw there. I get a pair of twos. She's like, do you want to split those twos? I'm like, you're goddamn right. I don't want to split those twos. So I split the twos. I get like a face card on the one. I get an ace on the other. She's like, you want to double down on that one? I'm like, you're goddamn right. I don't want to double down on that one. So I get something low. I end up with like 16 or 17. But again, I'm counting on the dealer busting out, paying me off here. So the last guy before the dealer, he's showing a 14. Brian, you got a 14, dealer showing a 4. What do you do in that instance?
I take my hand, I lay it parallel to the plane of the blackjack table, and I slide from left to right to let the eye in the sky know that I am not taking any more cards. I am passing.
Exactly. He looks at me, young kid, I get it, and I'm like, you don't want to take a hit on this. And so he then makes the motion that he wants a hit. The dealer looks at him and she's like, you don't want to take a hit on this, honey. And so now we're both like looking at him, we're both like shaking our head like no. And he's even like, you know what, I'm feeling lucky.
Oh no,
hit me. And of course he gets the face card, bust out, dealer flips, she's got 14, next card is a 5, leaving her with 19, beating the rest of the table, losing me $60 on that one hand.
Now, what did you do to the kid?
I was like, listen, I'm like, I understand you might be learning the game, but you know, if there were people with a temper at this table, they probably would be yelling at you right now for taking the dealer's bus card. Like, when the dealer's telling you not to take a hit, don't take a hit.
Did he seem to have regret at that moment?
He did not, which kind of aggravated me. But, again, I was just trying to have a good night, trying to do a little bit of gambling. I made a broke even for the night at the end of the day.
It's good.
But, again, could have been up with a few extra bucks in my pocket.
The thing is this, is that we've all been that person. Not, you know, I like blackjack. That's my game when I go to a casino. So I know the game very well. I know when to hit, when not to hit, when to split, when not to split. But I did not always.
Exactly.
And there was a time when I sat down at the table. I had no business sitting at the table. I did not play properly. Not only did I lose my money, but I got cursed at by some very angry people in Atlantic City. I lost, I think the first time I went, I think I lost $400 in less than an hour.
Yeah. But had the dealer been giving you advice, would you or would you not have followed it?
I would have taken whatever advice anybody would have offered me. The problem was that nobody at the table was offering me advice.
Yeah. See, and that's what I really liked about the dealer is she wants people to have a good time. She doesn't want people to lose all their money. You know, she knows that you can play by the book and still lose a hand, but there's just some things that are just painfully, you know, painfully evident.
So what I've tried to do now that I have learned the game is, like you said, sit there and you can't tell somebody, don't take a hit, because if they lose, they're going to look at you and say, listen, if that were me, I would not take that card.
Right.
And then you explain to them why. Because you've got a 14. If you get anything higher than a 7, you've busted. Let the dealer get that card. Assume they've got a picture. Let them bust. You can't force somebody to do something. I have also stood up and walked away after watching somebody do that at my table.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty much done for the night after that losing that money.
That leaves as much of a sour taste as Obalon Lager. Oh, excuse me. Hold on. Just practicing for next week's episode when we do start our bracketology. Is that next week or the following week?
I think maybe next week.
I think next week is when the bracket is announced. And then we will start the selections of weeks following. Can I tell you what my beef of the week was?
I would like to hear that, actually.
All right. So have you ever had a beef of the week just really materialize at the last minute?
I have, actually.
Okay, so this past week, I would say I had a fairly good week. No major issues, no stumbling blocks. I saw a good movie in a movie theater, which I haven't done in a long time. Overall, I would say I had a very good week. So this morning I woke up, looked at my calendar, saw that we were recording the podcast today. I said to myself, I gotta come up with a beef of the week. Went out today at lunchtime, and as I am walking down the street of Lower Manhattan, a Asian woman was standing in front of me, and in a short exchange of less than a dozen words became my beef of the week when she told me to go fuck myself.
Did she say that for any reason in particular?
Well, now we're going to rewind a little bit.
Okay.
In the basement of the building next to my office is a doggy daycare.
Okay.
So what you're literally talking about are well-to-do or affluent people, who dog owners living in Lower Manhattan. They drop their dogs off, so this way the dogs aren't alone. So I walk out for lunch. And I see a woman, Asian woman, walk out of the doggy daycare. She is cradling her dog in her hands. So this dog, literally his head or her head, is draped over the woman's shoulder. You see the four paws in the air. I would say this dog was like a, why would I describe it? It was like a, I want to say it was like a miniature greyhound.
Okay.
Like it wasn't a big dog, but it had that, like, it was very wiry in terms of body size.
Could have been like a Whippet or an Italian greyhound or something along
those
lines.
Yes, it could have been like a Whippet, yes.
Okay.
So it's very small. So she's carrying it like a baby. So I said out loud, aw, somebody doesn't want to walk.
Trying to be cute, trying to, you know, say, hey, I like what you're doing with your dog there.
Lady turns her head 90 degrees, so she's So she's like, you know, looking halfway between her front and her back, turns her head 90 degrees and says, "She just got bit, so you can go fuck yourself."
Information that you did not have
or when you care made the about. Comment. Couldn't have cared less. As soon as she said I could go fuck myself, I literally decided this woman was my beef for the week. And at that point, you know, some people might have been launched into redirecting anger at her.
Right.
And I did something that I am not known for, which was to passive aggressively insult her aloud. Because the thing is that it's a very long block. So I'm literally maybe like 2 feet behind her when this exchange happens. So now I'm just right behind her the whole way. So then I was like, "Did you just tell me to go fuck myself?" And she turned her head. She goes like, "Yes, I said you can go fuck yourself." And now I'm right behind her. So now I just start chewing her ear the entire walk back, but in the most passive aggressive way. So I remember I said something along the lines of like, "Oh, that's really a shame. I was trying to be friendly. You've just got some misdirected anger. But I guess, you know, I'm sure none of your bad personality habits come across to your dog. Maybe that's why she got bit." I was just fucking with this woman the whole way down, and then I felt like a terrible person afterwards because I should have just shut the fuck up and just cursed out the lady and moved on. But it wasn't in my personality. But yes, the lady who told me that I can go fuck myself, you are my beef of the week.
I mean, do you think it's possible that she made that comment because she's got some sort of like psychic powers and she saw a vision of you at that family Thanksgiving many years ago with that turkey neck?
It's possible.
I'm just throwing it out
there. I didn't even think of that, Ron. Wow. She could have had psychic powers to predicting what I was going to do next Thursday.
Speaking of psychic powers, Brian, again undefeated with your NFL picks last week. Can we look at this real quick? I mean, you picked the Cowboys on the road, giving 4.5. This was one I thought maybe your unbeaten streak was going to come to an end. It was the Lions made it close at the end, but again, Cowboys win by 8. And then the pick that I think really showed your balls of steel. With a slight smell of turkey to them. You said Skins at home getting 1.5 points. No, my friend. New York Jets beat Dallas Cowboys already. Beat New York Giants already. They clearly have the number of the teams in the NFC East. I'm picking them over the Redskins. Sure enough, Jets win 34-17. Kudos.
I'd like to take credit for the Jets, but I'll be ready. I watched them the week before against the Giants. This is not the Jets team from week 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is a new Jets team. If we could split the season in half and have two parts, the second half of the season, Jets, literally playoff worthy. You know, playing the Redskins, I just said to myself, they are far better. You know, the Redskins, they haven't scored a touchdown in 13 quarters going to this game. Brandon Darnold or whatever his name is, he's just, you know,
Sam Darnold, you mean?
Close enough.
Yes.
You know, this guy is he's got a potential Cy Young award in his future if he considers throwing passes. You know, the way he had 4 touchdowns and a couple field goals. I mean, just an amazing, amazing season that he is going to have between now and 2 weeks when his mono rears its ugly head again. I cannot take too much credit for it. However, if I can put the mirror up and turn it 180 degrees, you didn't have such a bad week either.
I mean, I can't complain too much.
Well, you knew that the Pittsburgh Steelers were not going to be bringing it against the Cleveland Browns. You saw the 3 points the Steelers were getting, and you said, absolutely, I would lay 13. Browns winning 21-7, that continues your unbeaten streak as you went into the late game. Colts taking on the Jaguars, laying 3. You sat there, if I remember correctly, you said that you'd be willing to bet your next 4 paychecks on Indianapolis. You may have done that. I'm not sure. You won't share your DraftKings login information with me. Colts winning 33-13. Ron, how does it feel after week 12? You've gone unbeaten to this point.
I mean, what's even, I mean, again, I kind of have to pat myself on the back for this one, because for that Steelers-Browns game, I parlayed my bet with Cleveland by also wagering that a player in the game would rip off another player's helmet and beat the man with it. And the people in Vegas, when I went to the sports book, they were like, I'm sorry, you want to parlay what for this game? They thought I was crazy. But you know, in Vegas, they'll take money on anything. Paid out very handsomely, I might add.
Well, ever since they hired Jimmy the Greek over at the Bellagio, I mean, I think that there has been somewhat of a more open-minded tenure there in terms of the types of proposition bets that they're willing to consider. I mean, the idea of a NFL helmet being slammed against another human being's skull, it was an act of savagery that the NFL has been encouraging from its players for generations, and now is asking for players to basically treat it like a ballet.
I mean, they, you know, again, I don't want to toot my horn too much, but they actually, in the sports book, they nicknamed me Danny Ocean because they said I just robbed them of all their money with that bet.
Now, here's the question. Did you use your proceeds to pay off your mortgage?
Not as of yet. You know, you put it into
You're waiting for the check?
You know, you put your money into higher interest bearing accounts, you know, then you make out a little bit better than paying off a mortgage.
Okay.
Susie Orman taught me that.
Susie Orman, is she still around?
Of course. And she's loaded. But anyway, let's see if we can keep this unbeaten streak going. Who do you like in the games this upcoming week?
This week I'm going Browns. They looked really good against the Steelers last week. They're losing their top defensive player, but I think it's just going to make them take it out of Miami even more. You may see some more helmets flying. It's the type of behavior that the Browns are going to continue. Browns, I have them laying 10.5 against Miami. I would lay even more. Then heading south, you've got the Saints taking on Carolina Panthers. Panthers have been a disaster this year with the uneven play of Cam Newton. Saints with Drew Brees, lay the 9.5, take the money to the bank.
All right. So I am going first. I'm staying away from the Thursday night game this week, but I am going to go with one of the early games on Sunday, Atlanta taking on Tampa Bay. Atlanta's been on a bit of a tear the last couple of weeks. They are favored by 4.5, so I am taking that line as long as I can. And, I mean, in looking over, I mean, you've got some real trap games going on here. But the one that I think is kind of crazy is you've got Seattle coming in to the Lincoln Financial Field here in Philadelphia with an 8-2 record. Eagles limping along at 5-5, but Eagles still favored by 1.5. I like Seattle winning the game outright, so I'm taking Seattle plus 1.5.
Not a lot of loyalty to the home crowd, Ron. Fortunately, you are not going to be in town when that happens, so you will have already left for upstate New York, so none of your neighbors will be able to tar and feather you after the Seahawks win. I mean, when Ron puts his money down on the visiting team, you know that you can chisel that into stone.
That's right. Money in the bank, my friend.
All right. Speaking of money in the bank.
Yes.
No, nothing. I was just trying to act like we had another way to segue into something else.
I want to try something new with you this week.
Ooh.
And first, let me see. You're not a listener of the Howard Stern Show on a regular basis, correct?
I have not been a listener probably since, I would say, 97.
All right. So they played this earlier. So if some of you listen to Stern, you'll already know the answer to this. But I want to hear Brian's take on this. I want Brian to guess this singer, a new album coming out later this month in the jazz genre. So not a strength of yours because you're very metal. I get it.
Correct.
But I want to see if you can guess who is singing this song?
When I'm away from you, I know what to say and do. But every time you're near, my courage disappears.
So I will give you, I will say it is not someone, it is someone famous, but not someone typically known for singing.
When I'm away from you, I know what to say and do. But every time you're near, my courage disappears.
Don't know if I'll get through being destroyed by you.
You look puzzled. Do you need...
I'm going to... is it somebody alive?
It is somebody alive, yes.
Okay, because my first thought was going to be Amy Winehouse.
No, not Amy Winehouse.
I need a clue.
Let's see. This person,
can I phone a friend?
This person is an Academy Award winner.
An actress who doesn't sing... Jennifer Lawrence.
It is not J-Law, no.
When I'm away from you,
Macy Gray.
No, Macy Gray is known for singing, but someone did actually guess Macy Gray this morning when they were playing this.
I need another clue. Can I do a 50-50?
Let's see. This particular individual is 78 years old, probably about 5'6". Would like to know, this person wonders if they amuse you. Oh, wait, now we're into the... This is a duet, so we're actually into the other person, so...
When I'm away from you,
okay, I amuse you. That's Joe Pesci.
This is Joe Pesci.
No, it's not.
It is Joe Pesci.
My courage disappears. Don't know if I'll get through.
Joe Pesci is releasing a...
My mind is blown right now. My mind is utterly blown. Can I hear this again?
Hold on a second.
When I'm away from you, I know what to say and do. But every time you're near, my courage disappears.
Don't know if I'll get...
So once you know who it is, you can kind of hear it.
Destroyed, yeah. By you. While you're collected and cool.
Yeah, right there.
He's actually duetting with Adam Levine on this song.
Ugh. Why would he? Are you kidding me?
I shit you not.
Joe Pesci is putting out an album.
He is putting out an album, which apparently this is his third album. He used to be a lounge singer prior to becoming an actor. His first album, I believe, was in...
Didn't he have a team with him and Frank Vincent? Used to have a... an act.
Well, in 68, apparently he came out with an album called Little Joe Sure Can Sing. He came out in 98 with another album, in character from his character from My Cousin Vinny, doing an album. And this will be jazz standards, I think 11 or 12 cuts, a couple of duets on there. He does this song, Baby Girl, with Adam Levine. He also does My Sharia Moore with Adam Levine. When listening to it, I thought both singers were women. Like, I had no idea who it was. And when they said it was Joe Pesci, I think I had a very similar reaction to you.
Well, you know, the kids are, you know, the kids really are into the androgynous sound nowadays. it's really what's popular. I almost want to hear it one more time, but I'm afraid that we're going to lose listeners.
It's possible. Maybe we'll play it. We'll put a link on the Facebook page if people want to listen to it.
When I disappear,
I mean, Joe Pesci was retired for like 18 years, and now he's in The Irishman. Now he's got an album coming out. Everything's coming up Pesci again. You still have apparently a shocked look on your face.
No, I am. You have taken me out of this podcast. That's Joe Pesci.
All right. Well,
no, I cannot. There's one word in there. There's one word in there when he says cool that it sounds like Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
Wow. Mind blown.
So
speaking of being blown,
is this time for another Jeffrey Epstein update?
I mean, Jesus, that guy literally was banging 15-year-olds.
So,
and you know who also had a bad week? Speaking of Jeffrey Epstein, is Prince Andrew?
Yes.
Holy cow! So earlier, over the past couple of weeks. The media, who just cannot get enough of Jeffrey Epstein, who, by the way, did not kill himself. So Jeffrey Epstein literally cannot get out of the news. So literally on a weekly, and we were really keyed up on this story several weeks ago. But, you know, our attention span, much like most Americans, is limited at this point. So, we're not updating our listeners on what's going on because we figure you're getting it from every other source of news. So, so this week, one of the quote unquote friends of Jeffrey Epstein, Prince Andrew of the British royal family, who was seen on Epstein's airplane?
I believe so, yes.
The Lolita Express, having made a few trips to Jeffrey Epstein's personal island in the Bahamas, not far from where you just recently vacationed, Prince Andrew photographed with Jeffrey Epstein about 2 years ago, long after Epstein pled guilty in Florida to receiving paying for sexual favors from a minor, having to register as a sex offender. But Prince Andrew did not seem to have a problem with that, continued to socialize with Epstein anyway. So the British people have been clamoring for some sort of apology from Prince Andrew, some sort of explanation on how he could be friends with a monster. So the BBC finally says, hey, Prince Andrew, let's do a video interview. Let's put it on the telly, as they like to say. To put it mildly, I found it unbecoming.
Yes, that was his statement. He said, Jeffrey Epstein's behavior very unbecoming.
unbecoming? He was just a sexual molester.
It's really quite the ballywick he had got himself into.
So Prince Andrew says, first off, that that he was trying to be polite when describing Epstein's behavior as unbecoming. Then he keeps doubling down. No, that could not have been he who had sex multiple times with a 16 and then 17-year-old girl who was one of Epstein's sex slaves because she described him as sweaty during their sexual relations. And he does not sweat. He has a physical ailment which prevents him from sweating. Is it really possible?
Yeah,
but then somehow photos showed up literally the next day in the British media with him looking hella sweaty. And the other thing that came out was that he questioned the legitimacy of him with his arm around a then 17-year-old girl who claimed that he had sex with her multiple times, questioning the legitimacy of the photo because he says that he does not engage in any form of public affection, so he does not hug people.
And according to a poll that the BBC did, only 6% of the public in the UK believed Prince Andrew when he said that he had not had sexual relations with that young girl.
Do you believe it?
No, I don't. And what's great is these additional horrible stories that are coming out about Prince Andrew, going back to October of 2007. Apparently, he made racist jokes about Arabs during a state banquet for the Saudi royal family. Someone said he made a joke about camels, quote, as worse as you can imagine, leaving the crowd slack-jawed. And then also in 2012, he's now accused of using the N-word at a Buckingham Palace sit-down with a senior political aide of Sri Lankan descent. Political aide said that he asked Prince Andrew whether the government department responsible for trade could be doing a better job, and stated that the prince answered, quote, well, if you'll pardon the expression, that really is the N-word in the woodpile.
Jesus, I that's not even an expression.
It's really not.
I've never heard that phrase whatsoever. An N-word
in the woodpile.
No, sorry, can't help you there.
So
what the fuck? I that doesn't even make sense.
In speaking with former Home Secretary Jackie Smith, the Sun reported that she made the comment that she believes the royal is, quote, not very bright.
Well, that's possible, but he's also not very delicate, I would say. I mean, clearly, whoever interviewed him did, there was no prep that was given to him prior.
No, you would think, you know, if you're going to be in an interview like this where you know it's going to be some very sensitive subjects, you know, you definitely practice, you get some guidance as to how to answer certain things. Not so much.
Wow, really shocking. Very disappointed.
And now very apparently it's costing his charities as well. KPMG is considering ending a current contract they have with one of his charities. Ripple effects throughout the UK right now based on that interview.
Wow. Shocking. Just shocking. Very disappointed. Very disappointed in him. Someone's going to have to talk to him.
And they arrested the guards that were supposed to be watching Jeff Epstein on the night that he hung himself. I'm not exactly sure what the charges are. They state that these guards falsified records that they had been checking in on him throughout the night. And apparently, you know, the FBI is looking into whether this could be, you know, a criminal act.
Well, it seems as if the guards that were supposedly, and one of the things in the, what do they call it, the maximum security area?
Yes.
They were supposed to be looked at every 30 minutes, and apparently he had not been looked at in hours. So the question really is, how much did Hillary pay the guards to look the other way? Because here was a man who was clearly suicidal. He had just recently tried to kill himself. So it is very possible that, Hillary showed up or Roger Stone snuck in and basically said to him, hey, listen, there's a scene in The Godfather where Frank Pagliatucci, he meets with Tom Clemenza and says, hey, you know, instead of giving testimony against the family, why don't you just do the right thing? And it's possible Epstein was coerced into committing suicide.
That is possible, although a forensic pathologist hired by his brother Mark Epstein has said that Epstein's autopsy was more consistent with homicidal strangulation. These two correction officers that were arrested already turned down plea deals from federal prosecutors, so it will be interesting to see how this plays out. What was also interesting, I don't know if you saw this photo of one of the women who was part of Jeffrey Epstein's child trafficking, came out and speaking today. She was wearing a bracelet that said Epstein didn't kill himself.
No, she the one with the blue hair?
No, she was a blonde.
Okay.
I don't know the one with the blue hair.
There was one yesterday in the paper who was suing him. She was picked up when she was 15 and flown to New Mexico to his estate there, where she was apparently had both her number one and number two orally massaged by a grown woman prior to being handed off to Epstein.
Well, that's disturbing.
Oh, it's genuinely a gross story.
Well, let's move on.
It's really unbecoming. It's just unbecoming of us to talk about.
Very much unbecoming. What else do you want to cover this week, sir?
Netflix.
Yes.
Have you watched The Devil Next Door?
I think I have one more episode to go, but it's been riveting so far.
Is it really riveting?
I mean, it's interesting. I'll give it that much.
Let me hear your take on it, because I feel, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I kind of feel like the Holocaust is really so 1990.
I don't know that I would say that. I do think it's another one of these specials where they've kind of strung out the episodes a bit. But it's, you know, I think it's important viewing for those people that may not be familiar with what happened in the Holocaust, because some of the images included in this special are truly horrifying. To see the piles of glasses, shoes, purses of people that have been killed in the gas chamber, the bodies.
So let me ask you a question, Rump.
Yes.
It's more disturbing to you to see a pile of glasses than bodies that are being moved by bulldozer, because there's so many of them and it would just save time, rather than dumped into a mass grave by humans?
I mean, you know, mass graves, the number of them I've seen over the years don't really bother me as much anymore.
Well, you do live in Philly. Yeah. So, I mean, every time you drive through North Philly, you see the mass graves.
So, I mean, if you see like a pile of, you know, five or six bodies, that's one thing. When you mm-hmm. see a pile of thousands of eyeglasses, I mean, I think that helps put in perspective the, you know, again, if they had shown a pile of 100,000 bodies, I think that right. would have been, you know, very, very traumatizing as well.
Not to diminish the eyeglass thing, but my people really do not have good vision historically.
Clearly, so, you need to get that taken care of this year.
Almost all of us have to wear glasses at some point or another. So it's you know, it's really safe to say, you know, that if you see a pair of glasses, you know, that's one person.
So would you say in the Demoniac case that that justice was served?
I don't really want to ruin it, because you said you hadn't seen the last episode.
I haven't seen the last episode yet.
Okay. So I'm questioning the timing of this, because Demyanyuk is a man who emigrates from Ukraine to America in the 1940s or 50s or 60s. I wasn't paying that close attention. But he moves to Ohio and really entrenches himself in the Ukrainian community there. I find it slightly odd that with Ukraine suddenly being in the news, that this would not be a time for Russian intelligence to promote a story about how terrible people Ukrainians are.
So you're saying it's the deep state is involved?
I'm saying Russian intelligence may have provided funding to make sure that this got onto Netflix.
All right, that's fair.
That's all I'm saying. But what I will say, so he moves to Ohio, starts with his wife, has kids, a family, lays some roots in the Ohio dirt. Issue is that it turns out that suddenly information is suddenly passed on to the American, we'll call it FBI. I don't think it was. It was the Office of Special Intelligence or Investigations, something along those lines. Anywho, but they basically says, hey, listen, this guy who claims to be John Demyanyuk, he's really Ivan the Terrible, who was a guard at one of the main concentration camps in Poland, and this guy was particularly brutal, would literally abuse people as he was pushing them into the gas chamber, would stab people with knives to get their bodies in. Survivors really had very strong memories of this man being one of the truly sadistical people involved in the death camps. He is arrested. He is extradited to Israel. Now, this man is, I would say at this point, mid-80s. So he's in Israel. There is not a shot in shit that this guy does not get railroaded into a guilty verdict. I mean, can you agree with me there? There was no way this guy was going to be found innocent.
Oh, there was no way in hell that that was going to happen.
So he is found guilty and sentenced to death. And I think that is the point where you've watched now, correct?
They are preparing for his appeal. I'm up to that.
So can you do me a favor? Because I'm now going to do a spoiler alert. So I need you to take your headphones off.
Okay.
Because I don't want to ruin it for you.
All right.
But what happens is, okay, now Ron has taken off his headphones. Now, what I want to say to the listeners right now before Ron comes back on is that I truly love this man. He is the brother I never had. He is the person that I look forward to speaking to on a daily basis. He makes me feel normal. He has never judged me. He has never made me feel less than perfect. And you don't come across many people in the world like that. Okay, Ron, you can put your headphones back on. All right.
Put your headphones back on. Well, thank you for not ruining that for me, sir.
So the point is the fact that by the end of the last episode, it leaves you with a question in your mind of, well, what really happened?
Gives you an uneasy feeling, if you will.
Well, you know what? I want you to you know, I just explained to the listeners what took place, and I want you to come with your own take on, because I really feel like this is a what was it, five or six. A lot happens in episodes 1 and 2. 3 and 4, really, they just kind of stretch out the story. 6 is where a lot happens.
I will try and finish that up prior to next week's episode. But you know me, I'm hooked on impeachment hearings fever.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were hooked on phonics. Oh, my God. We are impeaching, and what's your take on the impeachment? Because I'm bewildered at what's taking place.
I think today went very poorly for the Republicans. Some of the witnesses today were called because of the Republicans, because they felt that they would support their case, specifically the afternoon witnesses, former U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine, Kurt Volker, and Tim Morrison, who is the top Russia and Europe advisor on Trump's National Security Council. You know, both of them had very positive things to say about Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who testified earlier in the day. Everyone's had a lot of good things to say about Jennifer Williams, who also testified in the morning. You know, those...
I had some nice things to say about Jennifer Williams.
So those two national security officials testified today that Trump's July 25th call with the Ukrainian president was improper, unusual, and overtly political. Kurt Volker, the former special envoy, kind of played dumb and testified that he didn't realize that the push for a probe into a Ukrainian gas company was connected to Biden. And Tim Morrison kind of punted a bit, testified that he was not concerned that anything illegal was discussed during Trump's call with Zelensky. But again, you know, he was clearly a Trump pick, someone not overly qualified for his position. A lot of the Republicans, Nunez and Jim Jordan, tried to cast aspersions on especially Alexander Vindman, who I think handled himself very well today. I think the more that we hear from people that were on that call, the less doubt that there is that the President of the United States tried to use taxpayer money to bribe a foreign entity into investigating a political opponent.
Yes.
I think there is little to no chance that the House will not impeach President Trump. I think that definitely will happen. The question then becomes, is there enough evidence out there? More importantly, is the GOP concerned enough about results of things like the governor race in Kentucky and earlier this week, Louisiana, where a Democrat was reelected to be governor in a heavily red state that Donald Trump carried in 2016. Virginia having all of their branches of government now controlled by Democrats, the erosion of Republican support in the suburbs of key states, the leaning towards impeachment again in a lot of these states that Trump carried in 2016. We'll see. Whether a actual trial will happen in the Senate is interesting, because McConnell's not. You would think so, but the Senate hasn't really done anything productive in the last year thanks to Mitch McConnell. And can he drag this out long enough to make it last until elections in 2020?
This is where I think the Democrats made a tactical error in rushing to impeachment. I think what they should have done was waited until at least the new year to start it and then drag it out over the course of the campaign. I think what's going to ha- I mean, to me, what you're looking at here, and I spent an hour commute home today on Twitter on my train ride home today. And literally, if you follow the Ron and Brian podcast on Twitter, what is our it's Ron Brian podcast,
at Ron Brian podcast,
at Ron Brian podcast. I'll say it one more time, at Ron Brian podcast on Twitter. Give us a follow, like, rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends. It literally seems to be a situation where people are looking for validation in their predetermined beliefs. The Democrats, or the left, the liberals, the never Trumpers, to steal a term from the Donald, these people are seeing this as utter vindication, as complete victory. And the moment when the truth has finally reached the surface, the conservatives, the right, the Trumpers, the people that shove turkey necks up their rectum at Thanksgiving time, what you're seeing there is people who are, they're attacking the witnesses, they're attacking the credibility of the people that are giving testimony, they're looking for people that agree with the way they feel and are patting themselves on the back whenever there's anything that is set in line with what they already believe. Leads me to believe that because the Democrats have the voices in the House, they're going to vote to impeach. It's going to go to the Senate, where they don't have support. When you think about it, the Republicans really do not have that large of a majority right now in the Senate. It's 53-47 with two independents. So you really only need a couple Republicans to go the other way. Frankly, we know that with the Democrats, quite a few of them go the other way. But the Republicans are not likely to go the other way. So
I hate to correct you. Oh. Because you cannot impeach a president with a simple majority. You do need two-thirds of the Senate to vote for an impeachment.
Oh, they're never going to get two-thirds.
So they would need, roughly 20 GOP senators to cross the aisle.
That'll never happen. And to me, if there's any... If history in any way looks at this time, it's going to look at the Republicans here, who are going to see that they have abandoned everything their party stood for so they could suck from the teat of somebody who brazenly does not represent what they support. Here's a man who wanted nothing to do with the Republican Party, said, fuck it, I want to be president. I have a better shot as a running as a Republican, so I'm going to be a Republican, viciously attacked all their leaders, who literally did not know how to play his game. And uh, uh, as uh, as their representative fell down, they all immediately just jumped on the T train.
Now, would you say that there is a strong possibility that Donald Trump may not make it to the elections due to his health?
You know, there was something that happened. You're going to have to update me on this because I saw a lot of stuff, but I did not follow exactly what was going on.
So apparently he made a unscheduled visit to Walter Reed Medical this Saturday, which the White House staff is trying to pass off that he just had his annual physical a little earlier. But some people are stating that they feel that's kind of BS and that he probably has some sort of medical emergency that they were not able to handle at the White House with the physician and the medical staff there.
Totally possible.
So very possible, and certainly not out of the realm of possibility to believe that the White House and Trump would lie about it.
Reagan had Alzheimer's his entire second term, and we were lied to about his ability to run the White House.
Yes, I mean, this is nothing new.
Towards the latter part of his second term, his aides were literally running the White House. He would just show up, sit at his desk, and they would ask him to sign papers, and he would sign them. So do I think that the White House would lie about the health of Donald Trump? Of course.
I mean, Obama's clone ran the country for the last 2 years of his presidency.
First off, Obama was an alien, and he wasn't even born in America.
So, well, we will keep following the impeachment hearings. Again, we've got a little less than a year now until Election Day 2020, but I am certain that will be a tremendous shit show for the next 12 months. That is the only thing I can guarantee you.
My fear is that the impeachment hearings are over too early.
Well, in a way, I think the timing is very good. Because, you know, we are now, you know, I think you probably are looking at, you know, a potential vote in the House prior to the end of the year. It'll go through. I mean, he'll be impeached. Then you're at the holiday break for Congress. Then I'm sure there'll be a lot of song and dance before the Senate, actually gets things going. And that's, you know, the actual trial takes place in the Senate. So I think it'll be a very involved process. And if you look at what happened with Nixon, for example, you know, not a lot happened until the actual trial started. And when the trial started and they were able to call more witnesses and introduce more evidence, that's where you really saw his own party start to turn against him. So I think as you get further into the election season, especially further into the primary season, and a lot more dirt is going to come out, because there's very specific things they can discuss during these impeachment hearings right now.
Really?
Once he is impeached and that moves forward to trial, you know, they can add on additional charges, whether it's obstruction of justice, whatever, and they can present a lot more evidence in the trial than they can during these impeachment hearings. And I think, you know, a lot of this stuff's going to become very evident. And if the public opinion continues to turn against Donald Trump, I mean, you've got 70% of people that feel him asking a foreign government for help was wrong. You've got 54% feeling he should be removed from office because of it. I think if GOP leadership, if politicians feel that they're going to lose their own jobs, you will see them start to break from Donald Trump.
All right. I hope that happens. So I just, based on the spineless nature of what we've seen to date, I'll be surprised if that happens.
We shall see. So,
all right.
Anything else you want to cover this week, sir?
Not at all. I think this was a splendid pre-Thanksgiving episode. Next week, obviously, we'll be having our Thanksgiving family show, which is what are we going on? 15 years right now?
I think roughly.
We've got song parodies, we've got contests, You know, I think we have our traditional first eggnog of the holiday season. It really is a special episode. You know, we go back and play some of the bloopers. it's literally, you know, our Thanksgiving show is really a special time.
We'll have some special musical guests next week.
When I'm away from you,
maybe Joe Pesci will show up.
I know what to say and do.
I'll just leave that in the background for right now.
I love it. Are we out?
I think
you should just play this on the way out.
As always, you know, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. That'll connect you to all of our social media feeds. It will connect you to all of our podcast channels. And it will connect you to our Patreon if you would like to become a subscriber. Today is Thank a Patron Day, so we do thank our current Patreon subscribers and would appreciate more of you coming on board. We'll be recording our Patreon content right after this. But in the meantime, let's listen to some dulcet tones of Joe Pesci.
On my lips, then my composure slips while you're